This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next-level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next-level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
The Hail Mary was exciting, but initial reaction is even more exciting as we join you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and now newspapers.
I am J.P. Cadoran, and I witnessed the Hail Mary.
We all witnessed the Hail Mary.
For Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. I was like 18 feet away.
No.
I was.
You were there.
I should probably do the math, look at my shot, but yeah, I was probably 18 feet away, 20 feet away.
So you did not turn off your TV with a few minutes left.
No. Oh, but I was on Twitter during the game, working, of course, and I was talking with somebody when it was 20 to nothing, and I don't know what it was. I think they said that they had just turned the channel, and I just told them how jealous I was that I can't turn this off in front of me. So if I was at home, I definitely would have been part of that group.
Yeah, I even up down 20 to nothing, because to get to 20, they had held them to a field goal. I still had optimism. Obviously, it was fleeting. It's just this team, with a quarterback that good, I just always feel like, even though I have all the evidence to the contrary, that they can get back into a game. Obviously, I had given up, though, when they got that first down over the middle on a really nice catch, that we knew that the Packers at most would have, like, 30 seconds left if everything went right, which it did. And you got to tell me about going through the experience of covering the Hail Mary.
Yeah.
I mean, there had to have been a lot of fun reactions, fun stories that came from that.
Yeah, normally, like, we miss a lot because of traveling down from the press box to the field, but for this game, I had gotten ready a little earlier than normal. Like, I went down with maybe like 6 or 7 minutes left, and I was kind of all set up. So I wandered out to the field, and usually there's your credential says, like, you can be on the field with 2 minutes left. So stepped out onto the field and had my camera there. And I remember thinking, so I saw when I got out there really about like when Detroit punted. Like, I don't remember seeing any Detroit first downs or anything like that. So I got out there when they were punting, and I remember thinking to myself, like, well, I guess I'll film this, but there's no reason. Like, I'm never going to use any of this. You know, because like you said, they only had 27 seconds or whatever.
Right, right.
In my head, I remember thinking, there's no way I'm using this, but whatever. It'll help me kill the time and get ready for the post-game, sad, walk off into the tunnel of despair. And all of a sudden, they started doing it. And so ridiculous. I remember the pass interference play. So that the first play was, you know, I think to Cobb. It was a great play by the defender. Second one was the deep pass interference one. And the reactions on the sideline were just amazing. Like, John Kuhn was literally jumping up and down, screaming at the refs, and he was right in my shot. It was glorious.
Did you see it real time? Did you think that was pass interference?
Real time, I didn't know, but looking back at it, it's ridiculous.
I felt like, okay, yeah, I think that's pass interference. It's not a call you make at the end of a game, which is sort of ironic, because ultimately it was a call that maybe shouldn't have been made that turned into the biggest call of the game. But I really thought, real time and in the replay, he got pushed down. But so did everybody.
So the next play was the lateral to Rodgers that you're referring to, which was barely a face mask. But, yeah, I don't think Lions fans have any ground to complain about that when, if anything, it was a more egregious pass interference penalty.
Agreed.
So that bothers me that this has become a thing, a phantom face mask call.
Yeah, I feel the same way. But then, and especially after the face mask call, the defender, I forget the name of the guy who committed it, but immediate reaction was, oh no, what did I do? Like, he was walking off in disbelief, shaking his head, kind of. He knew he screwed up. Now, after the game, maybe once the gravity of the situation had sunk in, he was a little bit more defiant about that. But at the time, he definitely looked like a guy who had knew
guilty.
He had committed. And, I mean, he does grab the face. Even letter of the law, again, that's a call I guess I don't think I would make in that situation. But letter of the law, he grabbed the face mask. Yeah. It turned. Is it a penalty? Is it worth a personal foul penalty? I don't think anybody thinks it was. But it definitely was something to look at.
Well, the NFL laws are more clearly stated than anything.
Yes,
so.
It's crystal clear, right?
Yeah, I mean, as always, those are perfect. And then we get to the Hail Mary, and I remember as I was shooting that, I lost the ball in midair because it was so freaking high, because I'm not used to, I've shot, 8 seasons of high school football and Badgers football and countless practices and whatever. So, like, I've shot a lot of passes, and normally they don't go at that angle.
Yeah.
So I lost it a little bit, and then, I knew to go to the end zone with the camera, so pointed at the end zone and got that, and then got Aaron Rodgers jumping in the air perfectly. So
cool.
That was crazy. I really didn't realize, like, how big of a play that was, though, I think, until, like, even the next day.
You mean, like, how difficult it was to pull off?
Yeah, and the angle of the play, the ridiculousness of how long that throw was, and just kind of the gravity of the whole situation of, like, no, they weren't going to win until that. And, it was a crazy night. And, of course, the game started at 8:15 Eastern, which means we didn't get out of the stadium until about 1:30.
Lovely Detroit.
Had to work. Walked back from Ford Field to the hotel.
Oh, it's not that bad downtown.
It was great.
There's no one down there, dude. It's like a vacant lot.
It was buzzing.
Because of the game.
They had that game, and there was a Red Wings game that night, too.
Oh, that's cool.
So there were, what did that hold? Six. So there were 80,000 fans downtown Detroit. So
Downtown Detroit is very lovely.
Oh, I loved
it. Like it.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I more than liked it. We went out to eat before the game. There's an awesome area there called Greektown. Well done.
Three,
I liked it.
Three thoughts from this Hail Mary. Listening to talk radio this week is hilarious because you love to – I heard this morning, and I mean Aaron Rodgers played a great game, but discussion about how this was just such a gutty, gritty, wonderful performance. All of the reaction, how different it would be if they hadn't gotten extremely lucky and won on a strange set of circumstances, including a Hail Mary completion. The other thought I had was the number of things that really did go wrong for the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Things like – Richard Rodgers lateraling it to Aaron Rodgers, terribly misguided decision that probably could have destroyed the rest of their season. Given that a loss, they're still a playoff team with a loss. They're in much better shape now, but they would have been fine still. The three-man rush that turned into just a jailbreak on that final play. I mean, they couldn't have blocked it worse. Or I should say the Lions, their front was just really good. The three guys chased Aaron around, but Rodgers, being as elusive as he is able to get that throw off. And the throw itself, to me, I've always been operating under the assumption that Aaron Rodgers is hurt. There's something wrong with his shoulder because his precision just hasn't been what it has been in recent years. And I thought, wow, if you're going to throw it 65 yards mm-hmm. downfield to a receiver, clearly you're not hurt. I mean, that ball was a sight to behold all by itself, let alone the actual completion.
Yeah, and I think you're just talking about how the gutty, gritty win and how now everybody's faith is restored.
Right.
Which I think
they
they're
got
also,
lucky.
Yeah, and I think there also is a counterpoint to that, though, of this team could also be 11-1 pretty easily.
Oh, that's true, too.
I mean, the
yeah.
Detroit field goal, the Chicago fourth down, and then what, Carolina, they had a chance to win, too.
But definitely.
He threw that intercept. So they've had a chance to win. They could be 11-1. They also could be, 6-7 or 6-6 right now?
And you have to look at that, I think, when you're talking about the NFL playoffs. I mean, the New York Giants, all of the NFC East is garbage. The New York Giants are 5-7. But as somebody pointed out on Twitter early this week, if the games had ended with 75 seconds to go, they would be 10-2. How are you not? I would be terrified to face the Giants in the postseason with a losing record because they would win the East, let's say. You would go to New York. And I don't know, can you discount what they have? Are the Cowboys not? I mean, the Cowboys are still dangerous because all they have to do is get in somehow in that East, and then Tony Romo comes back. They're a full-fledged danger then at that point. The playoffs are such a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Even though the Packers are struggling so badly right now, they still could very well be dangerous by the time the most important
games. And it's not even like just win and get in and then hope you get hot. It's just win and get in. And then be better on that one day. You don't have
Definitely.
To be better than
totally
Seattle
agree.
Or Philly or Arizona even, which that game will be interesting. We'll find out
yes,
a lot in a couple weeks.
I think that's going to happen.
But, you don't need to be the hottest team either. You just need to be better that day. You just need
totally agree.
Just need a Hail Mary to go your way, or you just need Matthew Stafford to be still not that good. So, I don't know. I think Packers are okay. I think they'll be in now. I think we feel pretty good about them being
Agreed.
In the playoffs. And then it's just all about matchups, so we'll see.
The Milwaukee Brewers were also making some news this week. The hot stove heated up for a
Don't
Brewers
say
team.
That. Oh, that's terrible.
Well, it's a hot stove most years. This year it's more like a, I don't know, the dying embers it's of a three-year wait before the next competitive baseball
it's
team.
Not a stove. It's winter meetings with general managers and owners in one place.
So,
it's not a dumb cliche for you to write.
Okay, I apologize. The Brewers traded Adam Lind for three 19-year-olds that no one has ever heard of. All of them, I know that prospect lists are to be taken with a grain of salt. MLB releases their top 30 prospects for each team. They don't update it super. I mean, they do a little bit, not super regularly, so it can't be taken as gospel. But none of these three kids are on the top 30 prospect list in the Mariners organization. I was prepared to be underwhelmed. I was still significantly underwhelmed. And I think the biggest problem I have is either A, it means that Adam Lind wasn't going to fetch anything outside of these basically what we call lottery tickets, guys that could become superstars or could disappear before their 22nd birthday. Or the fact that the Brewers really, really are digging deep here. They are committed to not winning for the next. I mean, I thought 3 years was going to be a good timetable for them to be good again. Now I'm not sure that's the case. I think they're going for the 5-year, 6-year rebuild here.
Wow. No, disagree.
No, disagree.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes like one of two ways. Either you believe that David Stern got all he could, or you believe that he did not get all he could, and you know maybe the first winter meetings aren't as successful for him.
Yes.
I mean, I tend to believe that he got all he could. In that case, good job. So that means that first of all, Adam Lind, they didn't even need to extend his option this year. So they extended his $8 million option purely as a trade chip.
Okay.
So basically the Brewers, and they don't have to pay any of it. So basically the Brewers just gained three prospects that they never had before.
Right.
So first of all, A+ on that. Second of all, how's Hunter Morris doing these days?
Well, okay.
How's Taylor Green doing these days?
Okay.
How's Eric Arnett doing these days?
But this is not that. This is the opposite of what you're talking about. You're saying that there's no such thing as a true prospect. Because the top prospects, there's plenty of them that have
flamed
out.
Especially when you're 19 years old.
And there is a history of guys who are under the radar who ultimately do become something.
Yeah.
There are way more guys who are on the radar that become something than under the radar who become something. So you can give me examples all you want, but just don't tell me that that is evidence why this was a good move.
Well, and that's why they have Brett Phillips and Domingo Santana.
Yeah, no doubt.
Those are guys that are on
the
radar.
They have right now a very good farm system. I'm not going to complain that it's not. I just felt like, it's such a risk to try to expect anything from a 19-year-old, and it might be a risk worth taking. But they just got, and this is an unfair comparison to a degree, they got a Major League-ready starting pitcher for 2 months of Gerardo Parra. So either Adam Lind was significantly less valued than Gerardo Parra, maybe not significantly, but less valued, or maybe they should have just waited for a midseason trade opportunity, a risk because Adam Lind is an injury concern. But I felt like there was value out there that they decided to go for the long-term, super long-term possibility.
I mean, I still think that is – David Stearns aside, I think that's a huge surprise that that's all Adam Lind is worth.
Yes.
I mean, I guess he only hits from one side of the – or from one side of the pitcher's arm. So that is something.
He's not a superstar. I didn't think they were going to get the top prospect for some organization.
But he was one of the best Brewers last year.
No doubt. And a hot commodity, supposedly.
Yeah, so that's surprising to me, just pure what he was worth. Because I don't feel that he was worth more and David Stearns just didn't get it somehow. You know, I don't feel like he got fleeced on a trade.
No, I agree with that.
You know, he had two major league ready players that he turned down in favor of some 19-year-olds.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So,
but then my point is, then why not wait and see what you can get later? Because at $8 million, this team isn't shedding salary. They are shedding salary because they're getting younger and getting.
But they don't need
that.
To.
They don't
it's
need
a,
to.
Yeah,
right. They're not in a financial problem right now.
But and as David Stern said, I mean there are chances for home runs with these guys.
Of
whereas
course.
Maybe if you get, you know, the 10th ranked prospect who's in Double A and has already had a roller coaster minor league career, you know, maybe there's just a chance at a serviceable MLB player. I think they believe that there are chances for home runs with these guys.
We've already seen one of the prospects in the Yovani Gallardo trade this past year is a guy by the name of Marcos Diplin, who was very young and had a very good year in the Brewers system this year. So like I said, there are examples where this works, and maybe it works great. And yes, a top 30 list produced by MLB.com should be taken with a grain of salt. I just thought that Adam Lind was going to be worth somebody on the radar. Yeah. I'm not looking for a AAA major league ready guy, but I'm looking for a kid at AA who I think will be part of the team in 3 years capacity.
Let's say that you got somebody like a Chris Davis, who's like a prospect who was on top 10 list.
Yes.
But it's like, personally,
because the Brewers were bad, that their list was weak, is what you're saying. Oh, no.
Yeah, but somebody like him from another team. Like, say you got a top 10 guy, but then gets to the majors and does what Chris Davis is. Okay, well, he's going to hit home runs for you. Does that mean that that was a good trade, that you got somebody that you want to build around?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I mean, I've gone on record as a Chris Davis hater. He's not one of my guys. So,
right.
But that's my point, is that just because, you know, somebody's ranked doesn't mean that's a great... Even if they do turn out to be MLB players, that doesn't mean that they're somebody that you would want in that trade.
Yeah, and I get that. I think it's... I recognize that Adam Lind is not a superstar. He's not a make-or-break guy. Everyone knew that the Brewers were going to try to trade him. So it's not as though I expected to get somebody that I would say, if that guy isn't a all-star when he's in the major leagues, it's a bust. I don't feel that way. But I was surprised when I learned that there were three pitchers, and I started looking at the top 30 list thinking, well, must be one of these guys near the bottom of the list or something. And no, nobody is even on the list. I mean... They're not on the list because they're young and there's no way to know where they're going to go just yet. But there's also a lot of young guys on that list and they just aren't in the top. They're just not highly regarded, is how it comes down to.
Yeah. So I don't know. So as I think about the long-term ramifications of this trade, you talk about the 5-6 year plan, which I disagree with. I think that's crazy and you're dumb for saying it.
God, I hope you're right.
Yeah, I know. But like, I think of the rebuilding that they're doing right now, and I think of their payroll next year, which, if they get rid of Matt Garza, could seriously be in like the $40 to $45 million range. And if not, it's still, you know, $52 to $57 million range, because Garza's on the hook for 12 next year. But it's not like this awful, awful team. I mean, imagine their lineup next year is still probably going to be Davis, Santana, Braun, Jason Rogers, Scooter Gennett, Gene Segura, and somebody at third base with Jonathan Lucroy at catcher.
Yeah.
With Willy Peralta, Zach Davies. God, I can't even think. I'm so out of baseball.
It's going to be a bad team. I mean, it is. They'll have some solid players.
But that's
players.
Not a terrible team. No. In fact, maybe more frustratingly, it's probably like a 70-win team where they're just going to be close enough just to frustrate you.
Maybe. I mean, that's a worse team than what they had this past year. And this past year, they were a 94-loss team. So, I don't know. Nothing I want is for this team to be good next year in 2016 or 2017. I'm not crazy. I don't think they're going to be even remotely in the conversation for those two seasons. But
also, they don't need to tank next year.
No, either. I agree with that.
You know, all they need is just to kind of wait.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like they need those top draft picks, because in theory they have the players that they want to build around for the most part.
They're just really young and in the farm system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So they don't need a tank. So they can be fourth in the NL Central
some point, there's, I think, some validity to saying there's so many guys in the farm system that you don't need to go after a top prospect for Adam Lind just straight up. Instead, you get more volume. You get three young kids. Maybe one of them is a star in the future. In the meantime, you've got plenty of guys to fill spots. Yeah. You don't need to worry about getting guys who are going to be here in 2 to 3 years, because you've got those guys already.
Yeah. So I don't think they need to bottom out, and I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to be, which again is almost more frustrating, than I think they're going to be a 70-win team next year.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little worried that this trade is an indication that they are willing to look at the absolute long picture here and really start thinking like 2019. I mean, now we're talking about years where I might be dead. So I'm an old man, aren't I? Another frustrating team, the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll talk briefly about them. Are they? I mean, I feel like I'm missing something where I get so frustrated watching them, because I just cannot stand watching them play sometimes. They're just so frustrating. Defensively, they don't work. Am I wrong? I mean, should I be more patient with this team? I realize they're very young, but goodness.
I don't think you need to be more patient. I think that it should have worked from the get-go, and they should be better. And obviously, they'll tell you that, too. I mean, they want to be winning more. But, no, this is very much out of character and out of their schedule and out of their plan for the next couple years. You know, we're supposed to be seeing steps forward from all these guys. Thank you, Giannis, for proving it. And thank you, Jabari, for dunking on literally everybody you can.
Well, I mean, he's the big pitcher. I mean, he's the biggest problem for me, because he has those crazy dunks.
Yeah.
And yet he's barely even seeing the floor. He's scoring maybe, what, 10, 9 points a game. I mean, should I be worried? Obviously, he's working his way back. But we're past the year mark with the ACL. Should we not? Should I be worried that this is who he is? Or is it too early to make that assumption?
I would go with it's way too early still.
Yeah. All right.
And even if like, he's fully recovered.
He's still a rookie.
Yeah, I mean, he's still, this is his, what, 30th NBA game, something like
that? His 20th year of life.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying, even if he's fully recovered, even if he played all of last year and all of this year so far, I would still say give it 2 years until we know what kind of player this guy is.
Okay, you're right.
So calm down. Back off.
I want to get into the Bucks. I'm an average Bucks fan. I'm not a diehard by any means. I really was interested in watching them play this year, so I did. I've started watching full games, and it is so disappointing to do that because they are awful. Saturday will be fun. I actually predicted in the newspaper recklessly that the Bucks would be the first team to beat the Golden State Warriors. I have no reason to think that, but I thought, why not? Let's throw it out there, and people will think I'm clairvoyant if we actually get it right.
To be fair, they completely trash everybody that they play, not just the Bucks.
Yes, it's true.
Saturday.
And the Bucks do show well against teams that are better than them.
Apparently, they went 2-0 against the Warriors last year.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
That's what I heard.
That's interesting.
How fun is that?
Yeah. So, we'll see if that pans out. I did want to touch a little bit on the high school basketball scene. We're underway. Most teams have played about 4 or 5 games so far. Have you gotten to see anything that really, really stands out to you yet?
Brown Deer is kind of weird.
Yeah,
they lost to Riverside, but then beat Dominican. Mm-hmm. So does that mean they're just the perfect Division III team that they lost? They lost to Division I and beat Division IV.
I think that could be said. That is a good win against Dominican. I would say that seeing Dominican almost get beaten by Ron Colley. They went to Manitowoc to face Ron Colley.
Okay.
One, I think, on a last second block by Costas. I don't remember if that went to overtime or whatnot, but then I saw Ron Colley play against McGuanago, and McGuanago beat him, I would say, not handily, but they beat him.
Okay.
I mean, they were the better team. To me, that says, okay, Dominican isn't, and this should come as no surprise, they have no Diamond Stone. They're not the D4 heavyweight they've been.
Yeah, and it's not even just Diamond. I mean, yes, he was 25-14 a night, but it was Bressler, it was Good, it was Mutri. I mean, it was...
Agreed.
It was a ridiculous senior class that they had.
They did, and they've always been able to have great supporting pieces to go with their superstars, and they've had a lot of superstars. I would say that when you've got someone of Stone's caliber on your team, everybody else is going to be good by default because all the attention goes to Diamond Stone.
Yeah.
So I'm not I'm sure Dominican is still going to win, like, what, 18 games this year? I'm not down on them by any means. I'm just saying I think this might finally be time for somebody else in D4 to rise up.
Do you know they won their past 4 state title games by an average of 20 points?
And I'm sure that if you looked at the semifinal games, it would probably be even more than that. They have not been tested at all in the state tournament. Not at all.
Like, they had 30-point wins, 15-point wins. I mean, just never close.
Even when they won, when I first started covering them in 04 with J.R. Blount and, great name, by the way, and Ben Haley and Brandon Brown, even then they were untested. When Kwame Mitchell started, I mean, they've obviously not won every state title since then, but when they get to state, they are the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
They are an awesome, awesome sight to behold.
I think so Brown Deer was my observation.
Taurus Adams, the leader on that team, he's he's a guy who got experience in the state, winning a state championship last year. Brown Deer's won 2 in a row. Dominican's won 4 in a row. Germantown has been to 4 straight state championship games. They took care of Brookfield Central, the old stomping grounds of new head coach Mark Adams, to open up their year. They're looking very much the part of a very good team again. I'm really interested to see how the Classic 8 plays out in boys basketball. A lot of teams that I would say are pretty good, none that are great right now, although Arrowhead's missing their best player, Bryce Enzi, who's going to UW-Milwaukee. He has a foot injury and might miss the whole year. And they're still the game I saw, they beat Wisconsin Lutheran 91-90, and they earned every one of those 91 points. I mean, they are a track meet in the making. And I think that team right now, that team in Muskego, I would see as the favorites in the Classic 8. But otherwise, that is a wide open league.
Fun story about Arrowhead is that we have their game against Oshkosh North in the WBY Shootout.
Very good.
On December 29th.
Featuring Philip Flory. But if you watched your
high school basketball tip-off show,
you'd know that Flory is a little banged up right now.
A little banged up until either January or March.
So he will not be in the shootout.
So we will feature 2 really good teams without their best players.
Yes.
So that's fun.
That is fun.
But then the next night, we will be featuring Germantown against Stevens Point, which has a lot of good players.
The rematch of the Division I state championship game last year. Yes, Stevens sir. Point has all of the big pieces back from that team. They will be the undisputed favorite to win the D1 crown. They will be a favorite to go undefeated. I don't know if anyone is even going to come close to beating Stevens Point this year. They are
except
a juggernaut. Except Germantown on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel.
Because, I mean, Germantown still has Joel McLeod, Max Keefe, Connor Edmonds, and they're still
big
good.
Three. Yep, that is a big three right there. They are good. They are probably right now in the round ball rankings, which you can find at mycommunitynow.com/roundball. They are the number one team in our coverage area. You know, Brown Deer is actually number two. I think I got Muskego up there. So some
question for you. Why isn't Riverside up there?
Milwaukee Riverside is not in our coverage area.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah. Okay. Would you
have them up there?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. In the top five?
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
The coverage area is a little weird for us because we actually had an inquiry this week I did about why Cedarburg wasn't on the girls' side. Well, we don't go north of Mequon, so we don't cover the whole North Shore Conference. Mm. We cover half of it. And then we don't cover the Milwaukee City. We don't cover Marquette, Pius, DSHA, Wisconsin Lutheran schools physically in Milwaukee. We don't cover them.
If
so
they don't get your newspapers.
Well,
they
probably do, but the problem is if you go to Marquette, you know, maybe you're from New Berlin, maybe you're from Brookfield.
Racine,
maybe,
where the Trotter brothers were from.
Maybe you're from Racine. More likely you're from the greater Milwaukee area, but we have papers that are regional, and do we put Marquette in the Brookfield paper, in the New Berlin paper, in the Wauwatosa paper? Because we don't have a paper that serves the physical area where Milwaukee Marquette is. And we would have to put it in all of our papers or to presumably cover everybody who's there. So it's kind of a puzzle.
I learned something today.
I'm glad, JP. It's a good day for you.
Meanwhile,
now
we air wherever there is Time Warner Cable.
Yes.
There's not Time Warner Cable in Sheboygan or Fond du Lac.
A pity.
Or Madison. Manitowoc. Manitowoc, Sheboygan, Fond du Lac. There
so you are all on TVs, though, on the rest of the state. That's pretty exciting.
Not the rest
for you.
Of the state. Everywhere in eastern Wisconsin except those three communities.
Got it. Very good. Anything else on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel?
No.
That's it?
No, we're basically folding up shop and just airing me the rest of the time.
Yeah, well, I did see your tip-off show, which is still recurring. It's kind of cool. Some good tidbits.
That's a half hour of high school hoops. So we went to, I think, 10 or 12... I went to about 10 or 12 schools in a matter of like 4 days.
Nice.
And put a nice little thing together. So it gets you ready for the season that has already started.
Yes. Of course, I mentioned mycommunitynow.com/roundball. The roundball rankings, we've got all kinds of stuff. Career active scoring leaders, which is one of the fun attributes, I would say, of the site, keeping track of how close kids are to hitting 1,000 points in their career. And then we also have plenty of features. Our all-suburban football team landed this week. Brookfield East Sam Santiago Lloyd, our player of the year.
Tank.
Obviously. And Dave Keel of Homestead, state champion in Division II. He's our coach of the year.
Very nice. Yeah. Congratulations. Proud of you.
Proud of me? Yeah. Proud of Dave Keel?
Yeah, for coming up with the awards and just being you in general.
Okay. Well, I'm always proud of you, I guess, JP. What? This is awkward. Tell the people to go away.
Okay, go away. And you might get a podcast next week, but JR might get lazy and we might not do it. So
it's
basically all on him.
I have nothing to say to you, JP.
Goodbye, friends.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.